Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good evening and welcome to our show. The show this evening is going to be a little bit different from our other shows that we've had in the past because we want to have some fun today. We're going to have a little fun with our past. And that means we're going to find out what our moms did and did not tell us about, things that our moms did and did not tell us about before we turned 21. So what we're going to do is to talk about those things. If we have to get back on. Hey, lady, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to our show. You are one of our first guests here this evening. The others haven't quite made it yet. So we will start this evening. We are going to talk about what our parents did or did not tell us or teach us before we became 21, okay? And I know that sounds funny. Every time I say that to somebody, they just start laughing. I mean, the first thing they do is just laugh. Oh, if I could tell you the stories. Well, that's exactly what we want you to do, is to tell us a story. We are waiting on, well, a couple more folks are supposed to be joining us this evening, but I'm going to let everyone introduce themselves. This is The Connection with Deborah Brown Stearns, and one of my guests has appeared here this evening, so I'm going to let her introduce herself with her hair looking so fly and thick. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, keep going, girl. Tell us your name and tell us what you do. We want everybody to know that we're going to have hopefully a wide range of ladies coming in here today. So tell us who you are and what you do and where you're from.
My name is Bernice Hutton. Thanks a million for having me coming on. It's a great opportunity and a blessing to be here.
Yes, it is.
I am from the great state of Mississippi, Shelby, Mississippi, that is. And I am a realtor, a Texas licensed realtor with Century 21 Just Right Company.
All right. So now you know we have some professionals, and you guys have heard about me. I'm an ex-educator / event coordinator. But our original topic this evening is what your mother or grandmother, because some of us were raised by our grandmothers, what our mothers and grandmothers did not tell us before we were 21. And the inspiration behind this is because I had, oh, she's not a little cousin anymore. One of my cousins' daughter turned 21. So she gave a kind of a 21 going out to be grown weekend. So they went away together. They did some fun things together. Then they decided to do a video together to talk about what they had learned from each other. And I thought that was so inspirational and so wonderful. That's all I can say about it. It was wonderful. But what got me to thinking about that is that they talked about things that my mom and I had never talked about before. My mom and my grandma, we had never talked about before, even before I was 21 and even after 21. So to start off this question here, the first one, and I know everybody's trying to figure this one out. Did your mom ever talk to you, Bernice, about intimate things at all, ever, before you were 21? It may have, once you got married and everything, or everything comes out then. But before you were 21, I mean from your preteen to in the college and everything, what about you?
You know, mom would tell us stuff like, I'm one of six girls. And mom would tell us something like, you know, don't be messing around with those boys.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she's more into teaching us how to cook,
right,
how to clean. But personal things, she didn't talk about those things.
Yeah.
She didn't talk anything about, but she would tell you what not to do, even if you were married. She would say, you don't undress in front of your husband. You know, you don't walk around the house without clothes on. Always put your clothes on, cover up,
mm-hmm.
You know. So she would tell you stuff like that because you don't want yourself to become common to a man.
Hmm.
So make sure you don't undress in front of your husband.
Well,
but then, you probably never heard that one before.
No.
But again, we were six girls.
Mm-hmm.
And but in terms of intimacy, no. There was nothing ever about intimacy. And very little she told us about, I think I was third grade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, girls get cycles when they get about eight, nine. And sometimes folks waited until they were 13.
That was mine.
She called it a flower. And when your flower comes, the flower's going to come. I'm like, flower? What are you talking about? But we had a charm club in school for the third grade, fourth grade girls.
Mm-hmm.
Boys couldn't attend. So the teachers taught us about things you should do, things to expect, and things you should not do.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't discussed at home.
Wow.
And of course, when my flower came,
mm-hmm.
I told my older sister. I didn't tell mama. I told my sister. And then my sister went and told mama.
Yeah. Well, mine was a lot different because, you know, I was raised with the seven boys there at the house with me. So all I did was boy things. So my, if you call it a flower, mine was more like a brick. I looked up and I had coloration all around me. And the boys were like, what's that? I'm like, I don't know. What's that? And I don't know what it looks like. I'm like, okay, well, I'll just go in the house. And mom said, what happened to you? I'm like, I think I got hit with one of them bricks out there because the boys. So I'm like, she said, girl, get in here and get, I mean, like mad with me now. I'm like, what? You never told me anything about it. So I go in the bathroom and get all washed up and everything. And then that's when I found out. I mean, I had no preparation, no pads, no nothing. And, you know, my sister Shelley had to go and get the pads and things that I needed. You know, she didn't have any, wasn't her time all around that. But then they wanted to sit me down, or Shelley did, and sit me down and tell me what was happening to me. I'm like, oh, okay. So a lot of the intimate stuff and personal stuff, I either learned from my sister or my friends or folks at school. That's the way that you hear them talking about stuff that happened to them or vice versa. That's how that went on and on and on. So then this thing came about, you can't play with your brothers anymore. You can't go wrestling with them anymore. You can't play ball with them anymore. You can't sit on your granddaddy's knee anymore or in his lap. And I'm like, somebody's going to have to explain something because I just don't get this. And they never explained why. And I still until later on. It's like once you turn 13, your life like turns, it's like you're coming into womanhood or whatever, but they don't tell you that. They just say what you can't do, but they never told me why. So that's one of the things that I remember that happened to me.
My mom's sister, her husband used to play with us all the time when we were little.
Mm-hmm.
He would tickle us, you know. You come on, let me tickle you. Come on, let me tickle you. And they would tickle you under your arm, and you would laugh so until you almost peed on yourself.
Yeah.
And they would just tickle you. But then after we started growing up, they said, he would say, well, I can't tickle y'all no more. And never said why they couldn't tickle us anymore, you know. Again, I was one of six girls. My aunt had boys.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had three boys, but my aunt had four boys. My aunt didn't have any girls.
Mm-hmm.
And Uncle Doug would play with us and tickle us all the time. But as we grew older, started developing breasts, then he stopped playing with us, you know. And I didn't understand that.
Never told us.
Now, when my daughter, you know, Ann.
Yes.
Ann and I kind of grew up together,
mm-hmm.
and Ann was very inquisitive. By the time her bedroom was across from my bedroom, and she said, Mom, can we have a mother to daughter talk? I said, oh, Lord. What is she going
to
say now?
It's like the man talking about, oh, we need to talk. Oh, they started getting the change in the face and everything.
And one day she said, Mom, I said, yeah, I understand that the baby comes out of the woman's stomach. I understand that. She's about 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she understand that. She said, but what I don't understand is how did the baby get there in the first place? I said, Abba. You know, mouth was open and no real sounds coming out. She said, oh, Mama, it's okay. You can explain that to me later. So, and it's about 9 or 10. She said, Mom, I said, yeah, can we have a mother to daughter talking again? I said, oh, here we go. But she'd always catch me, she'd crawl across the hall.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the bed, I'm in bed. And she said, well, I understand now how the baby got in the stomach. I said, really? So, yeah. And she started talking about the stork. You know, the bird.
Yeah, the stork. Oh, that story, oh, the stork delivered the bird. That's right, the baby bird. Yeah. I remember that big old stork and that little old baby sack hanging down from, okay, that was a cartoon for a long time. I can't think of the name of it, but keep going. Yeah, when we were growing up.
I never did explain to her back then when she was small,
mm-hmm.
but there was nothing she would talk to me about.
Wow.
She talked to me about everything. Of course, and It was kind of difficult for me to talk to Ann along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Although my mom didn't talk to me, it was kind of like you pass things on.
Right.
What happened to you, you find yourself in the same boat with your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So Ann developed extremely early. Ann was about 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
and she started developing breasts. And, of course, there was about 19 of those kids. My daughter and all of the grandkids, all of Mama's grandkids, my
mm-hmm.
sister's kids, so Ann's cousins, of course, Brenda, Jacqueline, they didn't develop as quickly as Ann did.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're all out in the yard playing. And they were playing watering each other with the hose, water hose.
Right.
Then, of course, everybody got a little t-shirt, that top shirt.
Yeah.
My sister looked around, here Ann with some, with the hood. A breast start. And Irma looked, of course, everybody got theirs off.
Mm-hmm.
And Irma said, she told Ann, come here, Ann, you got to keep your shirt on. Everybody got their shirt off. Why should I keep my shirt on? You look different on the top. You have to keep your shirt on. So you need to talk to Ann. Let her know she can't run around with her top out.
Yeah, with her top out. Oh, my goodness, with her top out. But that is weird how some girls develop earlier than others, you know, because I look like I developed overnight for some reason or another, you know. It was like I started going breast even before I had my cycle, so But once I got my cycle, everything changed. No more playing with boys, no more wrestling, no more shooting marbles. I'm like, what? Who cannot shoot marbles anymore? I mean, that just hurt my heart. All I needed was, and they had no explanation for me. And they still, to this day, still haven't told me. I just had to figure it out on my own, and I learned one way or the other. But, and then you have to think about, it was the way that they were grown up, you know, that they grew up back in the day and in their time. You have to wonder what they went through to get to this point, what they had to discover. So I was like, phew, this is hard. This is hard, hard, hard. But even today, and I guess maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the next question is, I hear people always talking about having a family meeting. And this is like the immediate family, not your cousins and what just happened? Not your cousins and uncles and all of those folks. This is like the immediate family, right? So we never had a family meeting. I don't ever recall having a family meeting about anything. Mom just told us what we were going to do and how we were going to do it and be done. Come in the house at different times. Everybody had different chores and things to do. The closest thing we got to a family meeting, you know, my mom was a smoker. She came in. Somebody had been in her cigarette pack. And she lined all the kids up on the sofa, including me with my sensitive nose and Walter with his asthma, lined us all up on the couch. And she just started from beginning and went all the way down. And she smelled their breath and smelled their nose and stuff like this so she could see where the cigarette. And then she got to me and skipped over me. And I'm going like, what the what? Why she skipped over me? You know, I'm upset. She like, really? You up there? Everybody, we know what it's like for you with smoke and ashes and this, that, and the other. But that was the closest thing to a family meeting that I had. So what about you? Did you ever have family meetings?
It's a question to me at a family meeting. Mm-hmm. The family meeting that I can recall, it was a meeting, all right.
Uh-oh. Ooh, I can't wait to hear this one. Okay.
You know, we lived in the country.
To begin with. But you all moved to the city early. Okay. In the country. That means there were no red lights out there and no stop signs.
Nothing but the moonlight.
Moonlight. There you go.
And we had never seen a football game.
Never seen.
We were about, I must have been about 11th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Grove Street didn't always have a football game.
Mm-hmm.
Football team.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was around in 65 or 66, or even later than that,
mm-hmm.
before we got a football team. So everybody would talk about the football game. We decided, Louise and I, my next younger sister, decided, mm-hmm. Are we going to the game tonight? Told Patsy, our younger sister, tell Mama that don't worry, we got to ride home. We live in the country now.
Mm-hmm.
We got to ride home. And we got to stay for the football game. And sure enough, I went to Jamie Young's house.
Mm-hmm.
Louise went to Alma Johnson's house, Pig's house.
Right.
And, of course, we took a bath at their house. I lived so far in the country. We didn't have that during those days. We didn't have running water.
Right.
So to see a bathtub,
that was on my list, keep going.
First time seeing a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
I said, can I take a bath? Yeah. So I took a bath. I had a good time in that bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we went to the game, Harold Billings carried us home. Harold's father had a car.
Mm-hmm.
So he carried us home. And we got home. Everybody was still sitting up. You know, everybody sitting in the front room. So everybody sitting up. We talked about the game. Oh, we had such a good time at the game. So we explained to everybody all the fun we had. No one said a word. Not one word. Of all the people in the house, nobody said a word. I said, Louise, they're not talking. She said, I guess not. Went to sleep. What woke us up that next morning, talking about a family meeting? What woke us up that next morning? The sheep flew off the bed. And Mama had these switches planted together. She said, oh, so you're grown, huh? You don't ask me if you can stay for a game. You tell me that you're going to stay for the game. And she commences to whipping on Louise. She hitting Louise with the switch. Louise wouldn't cry. So, you're not going to cry, huh? She kept hitting Louise, and I said to myself, Louise, please don't cry. Don't cry. Don't you please, don't you cry.
Oh, my goodness.
Louise for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Louise broke out crying. So I knew I was next. So Mama, at that point, just came right on over and started whooping on me, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hollering before she got to me. So she didn't have to break me, per se,
mm-hmm.
because I was already crying. And so you're going to do it again, huh? You're going to do it? No, Mama, no. But that was the family meeting. That was the entertainment for that weekend.
You go,
that,
girl.
She beat them down in the bed.
You
know, you have any clothes to cover up.
Nope, none. Not if she snatched them off of you already. None whatsoever. Okay. And, you know, growing up the whole time, I didn't know I was poor until I graduated from college and got my first job at St. Gabriel making $577 a month. And then we get paid during the summer. So I didn't know I was poor because my grandparents and parents had everything that we needed right there. You know, they had the chickens, the hogs, the cows, this and the other. Then they had the garden vegetables, and they traded. You know, if somebody went fishing, and you can trade for the eggs or the chicken. You know, they bought it with each other. So I did not know this. So I'm thinking, you know, we'll talk about living high off the hog, doing this, that, and the other. But then you get older, and you hear family members, other family members, talking about finance, budget, saving. And I was way out of college by then, you know, probably my fifth or sixth year of working here in Texas. But I'm like, I started to think back. I don't ever remember my folks, whether it's parents or grandparents, talking about finance, savings, you know, anything like that, you know, wheels or nothing like that. You know, did you guys have that?
We didn't know we were poor.
No, see, I'm not the only one.
Yeah, we weren't poor. We didn't know we were poor.
We didn't know we were poor.
They didn't talk to us along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everything was the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we were accustomed to. So if it never entered into your
mind.
Oh, how's it going to enter your thought and your mind process if you don't have an inkling that you're poor?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of made me think that we were a little bit different than other families.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many families like us, was that we had to slip off to go to school. We were sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that we'd get paid once a year, which is at the time of gathering the crops.
Mm-hmm.
So after the crops were gathered, of course, that's when they would settle up, as they called it. But then it was a requirement that we had to go to the field.
Right.
Did not connect that to being poor. It was just one of those things that
you had to
was
do.
Required of us that we had to go to steal.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself was, you know, we kind of made a game out of it. There were many days that we would get up when the sun would rise and go to the steal
mm-hmm.
and shop cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And then come home just long enough to slip our pants off, leave the house running because Daddy's going to come after us.
Right.
And we'd break and make it to the school. And sometimes Dad would have the boss man truck, but Daddy was the driver. Mr. Payne would bring Daddy to the school.
Mm-hmm.
Say, Herman, come to the office.
Uh-oh.
So we knew Daddy's out there with the truck. Throw us on the back of the truck and make us go home. But we didn't attribute that to being poor. It was just the way it was. And if we wanted to go to school or to learn anything, we could go to school on a Friday. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you go to the field. Go to school on Friday to take the test. But again, that's the way that was. But we never attributed that to being poor.
Nope, never, ever. And I can remember we had the little piggy banks and we had coins that you could save and use for a rainy day or when you go to church or when they would go to town because, you know, You didn't go to town every day. That wasn't a thing that you could go to town every day. But things like inheritance and trust funds and savings, I never heard much of that stuff until I was way into my 40s. I'd heard of them, but I never really experienced them or knew anybody that was actually doing stuff like that. So for those of us who are a little bit younger than our mothers and fathers, if you don't know about them, you need to try to learn something about them really, really soon. So that's what that was about. But at any rate, for those of you who have not started saving using a trust fund, inheritance, start. You'd be surprised what you can find with it. Really, you can. But you said something earlier about the first, and I just have to get this off my chest. I was, after I graduated from Valley, I started working at St. Gabriel, and I would drive my grandmother in the prayer band members around, those who needed rides, and the older women, you know, by that time. They started talking, and they were telling their stories about the first time they saw different stuff. And one of the ladies said, "Girl, I remember the first time I saw this light-skinned boy. Oh, my goodness, pale face. Yes, he was. And we had never seen a light-skinned boy before. And, girl, we just looked and looked and looked, and he was so pretty. He was so pretty that I was just cracking up. I mean, the first time you saw somebody that was light-skinned, that must have been something unreal." And then another one said, "Girl, there ain't nothing. The first time we went to town and my mama bought me a stoveball dress because I was going to my auntie's funeral. She bought me a stoveball dress, girl. It was so pretty. Everything was like pretty. Yeah, and those first times that you hear about stuff like that, and I'm like, you know, there are times when I just can't imagine having to grow up in the same time or era with my mom and grandmom, not to mention my great-great-grandma. I just don't know. I don't know what kind of person I would have been, but I really, really don't know. It was, and the, one of the other ladies said, "But ain't nothing. We went into these somebody's house that went over. I don't remember the exact details, but they had some running water. The hydrant."
Yes.
"The hydrant came on, and it was some running water, and it was good too, and you could drink it." I was just at awe to hear about all those things that we take for granted,
yeah,
that they thought was such a big deal, you know, back then. So if running water is a big deal to them and seeing a light-skinned guy, I mean, our little concerns have nothing, you know. If that was their highlight, we can just forget it. We weren't even in the running for it. And the other thing, did you ever talk to your mom or grandmom? You know, we all had them in high school and junior high, but we had our first little breakup with our boyfriend, and we thought we were in so much pain, emotional pain, and then the next week we had another boyfriend or something like that. You know, because every other month you had a different boyfriend, but then every now and then you had one that stayed around for a while, and that was the one that stuck on you. But through all of that ups and downs with the boyfriends and stuff, my mom, even if she saw me crying or moaning or playing the same song over there, she said, "What's wrong with you? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what has Charles done now? You know, what did you do?" Or whatever, you know, that's what she would say. But that would be about it, you know. And I'd go in my room and close my door, and I guess she thought she wasn't supposed to come in. I don't know, but she would never talk about a heartbreak or a breakup or emotional stuff like that. What about you?
I wonder why they wouldn't do that, I wonder.
I have no idea. Yeah.
You know, it was, she would say stuff like, if you try and persuade a child, your daughter, your son, or whatever, against someone, then that's the one they're going to gravitate toward.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want them with a particular guy,
mm-hmm,
you can't voice it because they'll go more toward that guy. Now, of course, Mama was mother was like, you know, I got married. I lived in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I get mad at my husband back then, and I used to sew. I had a sewing machine. I would get mad. I would bring my sewing machine with me. Up the shelf that I would go. I'd run it off. Mama would say, it's getting late, isn't it? I'd say, yeah. Everybody getting in the bed by 11:30. I'm still sitting there. She says, you got your sewing machine with you? So I started crying now. Yeah. She said, you and your sewing machine, y'all get on back home. And you better get there before he gets there. She said, you don't come running off of here with you and your sewing machine. So she knew if I had that sewing machine, I was mad at him, and I'd have run off. So he was always on his side. And she admitted
Isn't that funny? Yep.
Yeah. So me go home.
Yeah, it's funny how they happen. They would always take the man's side. What did you do? What did I do? Maybe they did something, you know. But anyway, I had a friend. She said, look, I can't be on the show tonight, but you're going to have to ask this question. She said, your mom know that you're in a relationship, whether it's a marriage or you guys are going to study, if you've been in a relationship for a long time with the same guy, you guys have been on and off like this, that, and the other, and you stand with your mom or around your mom, you haven't made 21, or even if you're after 21. She said, the question is, why is it that your mom or your grandmom can't tell you how to leave a bad relationship? And I went like, yeah. The bad ones that keep coming back, you keep letting them back in, you know, why can't they tell us how to get rid of them? I have no idea. Because my mom just, she said, you'll know. When you get tired of them, you'll know. And you'll know what to do. And that was about it.
The one thing the mom would teach us was that you should always be self-supported.
Yep.
A woman must be self-supported.
Always.
No matter what. If the man is not there, you must be able to take care of yourself. And they pushed education.
Mm-hmm.
Because although when we were kids and going to high school, they made us go to the field, but at the same time, they were pushing education.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to school one day out of the week, but then you better make 100 because you got to balance those grades.
Right.
And grades that you should have 5 grades.
Mm-hmm.
You only have... should have 5, you only have 4.
Mm-hmm.
But what they end up doing, your grades will be averaged by 5.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a daily grade because we weren't there. So she would stress, she always did stress being self-supported.
Right.
If you were married and all of a sudden you find yourself unmarried, you don't fall. Keep yourself picked up. Always be able to support yourself. And you can do that through education.
Yep. Through education and knowing some skills. My mom said, you don't have to have a job to know some skills. She and my grandmother did that. I was like, okay, what do you mean by that? I was saying to myself. She said, before you leave this house, you will know how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to clean. You know how to wash. You know how to take care of kids. You know how to iron. All of that stuff we could do. I mean, from scratch. You know, if you didn't have some washing powder, you made up some with some soap. You found something to clean. I mean, cleaning the floors, cleaning the furniture, cleaning the house, cleaning the kids. You could do that. Somebody is always going to need somebody somewhere to do that. But on top of that, you need some education too. So you had to go to school to learn all of this. And so all of that was taught to us. But as far as being expressive in your feelings, in your emotions, or even talking about your future, what you want to do for the future, I didn't have that conversation. What you want to be when you grow up, you know, stuff like that. I can remember the teacher asking me something like that in school, first or second grade. I don't even remember a teacher asking me anything like that in high school. What do you want to be when you grow up?
You know, I don't recall a teacher asking us that.
Exactly.
They didn't encourage us during my era,
mm-hmm.
they used to be the teacher's pet era. You know,
yep.
It was kind of like, depending on your skin complexion.
Mm-hmm. The lighter, the brighter.
That's right. Then they would talk to those students about
mm-hmm.
going to college.
Right.
I didn't know I could go to college. When I got out of high school, I did not know I could go to college.
You have to explain that one now. What do you mean you didn't know you could go to college?
You know how you go and take your ACT?
Right.
To prepare to go to college?
Right.
But then we had to figure it out on our own that once you graduated high school, if you wanted to go to college, you could go to college.
Hmm.
Patsy is the one. My sister Patsy?
I remember Patsy.
Patsy is the one that told us, Dad, you can go to school if you want to. Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you need to do?
And you had graduated after that, right? Because Patsy's behind you.
Patsy's younger than me.
Right.
Patsy's, 4 years younger than me. So out of high school, of course, I didn't know. Then when I did go to college, of course, I worked my way through college.
Right.
And I paid for everything. And one day someone said to me, so you're going to come back across the summer? I'm trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming back across the summer? And I said, I don't know if I can afford it. Did you apply for a loan? I said, a loan? What kind of loan? She said, student loan. I said, no. So you know you can go to the registrar, the registrar's office.
Registration office.
Financial aid office. Financial aid? What are you talking about? And she said, you can get a grant too. The pastor told me. She said, you can get a grant. And you know what I got my first grant?
Mm-hmm.
Going to my senior year.
Whoa.
I paid for everything. Working like a Hebrew slave. I went to school at Delta State.
Oh, that's right.
I graduated from Delta State.
Mm-hmm.
And but Delta State was right there in my hometown. So I would go to school at night,
mm-hmm.
work during the day. And finally, when I had 1 year left in school, I worked at Baxter Healthcare. I had saved 1 year's worth of salary.
Mm-hmm.
I got 1 year left in school. And I thought, okay, I need to balance this thing out. How many classes do I need to take in order for me to get out now in this 1 year? So, you know, my major was computer information systems.
Mm-hmm.
Back then with the punch card.
Right.
When I figured it all out, I decided, well, I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit my job. I quit. And took on 21 hours, 23 hours, 24 hours. The most hours I carried ever was a 24-hour semester at Delta State, and with computer classes.
Wow.
But you're talking about somebody was trucking.
You were trucking.
Honey, and came out with the
4 points.
On color roll.
There you go. There
yeah.
you go. But, I mean, I can remember the counselor telling us about we could get a grant to go to college, BEOG, Basic Education Opportunity Grant. And I was able to get on work study. So between the Basic Education Opportunity Grant and work study, I didn't have to pay anything till I graduated, and they sent me a bill for like $135. And I went to Valley the whole stretch of that. But on that work study program that they had that you had to go through, every month when I would go back to the registration office, I would sign my name on the check, and they give me $10. And I worked in public relations, and they worked me over there in public relations, you know, upper bound, every football game, we had to take pictures, write a report, every concert, every event, you know, whether it was homecoming, this queen, that queen, and all the yearbooks and stuff, we did that. We did. So, yes, they worked me. I got mine. But I don't know what year they stopped doing the BEOG grant, but it hurt a lot of people. That's for sure. That is really for sure. But now we're talking about schools and teachers. So I don't. What were they supposed to do? I mean, I'd ask my kids at 4 and 5 years old, "What do you want to be?" but I don't remember, maybe they did in high school, but I don't remember any teachers even asking or even pushing us or encouraging us to be anything. I really don't.
I don't either.
That's enough. That's,
they didn't do it.
I know. That's a different, so maybe that was their era growing up, but I don't know. Okay, late nights, trying to come home with your mom. Them telling you. My mom didn't have, okay, the question is, did your mom talk to you about staying out late in your teens? Talked about it? No. But did she have some consequences? Did she show me some consequences, man? Oh, my God. My brother, Ronnie and Harity and somebody else, they had gone to the Army, and they came back, you know, for furlough, whatever it was that weekend or whatever. I think I turned like 15 or 16 years old. So I had been going out before, but I know get home by 12:30 or 1, you know, that was a cool time. They came in. No, they went out, took me out with them. I'm just having a good time. You know, I love to dance. And they come walking back in the house with me about 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, you know, I don't have no car. There's nothing else I can do anyway. So I go to my room, they go to their room, and like 5:45, that was a Friday night, so I'm waking up on Saturday morning at 5:45. Why is she waking me up at 5:45 in the morning on a Saturday? And I just laid down. She knew this. She knew I love my sleep. I love my sleep. My mom got me up. I did all the washing and the cooking and the cleaning. And I was good. No problem, you know. Same thing happened on a Saturday night. I'm up now. I'm ready to go out again. So I can go out again. No problem. Boys bring me back home again. This time, it was like 4:15, 4:20. My mama, and it was Sunday morning. Here we go. 6 o'clock, waking up, getting ready for Sunday school. I was so sleepy. Bernice, I was so sleepy. I was drunk sleeping. I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to talk. She said, I don't care what you do. You're going to get up and you're going to church. You're going to Sunday school. You're going to go to church and everything. Oh, by the time I left church, I was so sleepy. My mom, I went in there late. She said, nope, you got to get up. Mm-mm. You can stay out all night. You can stay up all day for the Lord. It's Sunday. I went on my grandmama's house. She called. She said, she can't lay down. She can't go to sleep. Call Amarillo's house. She can't lay down. She would not let me go to sleep. When I finally got into bed about 9, my regular time, about 9:30, quarter to 10, girl, I was so sleepy, and I've never done that again. Never have I ever stayed out that late. I said, whatever I can do at 4 o'clock in the morning, I can do it better at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because I'll be awake. I mean, that was my punishment. She didn't get loud. She didn't get obnoxious. She didn't do anything. She just made me stay awake, because she knew my weakness was sleep, and that's what it took. That's why they took so. I don't know. What was yours?
Well,
you had to sneak out, huh?
One of the things the worst thing I thought happened to me was, you know, we didn't do anything. We just went to a ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And after the game, we came straight home, and she beat us down. And I thought that was the meanest thing. But we didn't, you know, living out in the country, you couldn't go out anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, but like, you guys didn't have a curfew or hours or anything, but you were always at home.
We went home.
Okay.
Going out in the country. We went home.
Mm-hmm.
But then my senior year, we moved to town. And, mm-hmm. Of course, we would walk the streets. You know how we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
We'll walk.
Back and forth.
Back and forth. I'm going to go piece the way with you.
Piece
the way.
Piece
you know
away.
What piece the way means?
Piece the way. Yeah, half and half, piece the way. And by that time, it does dark, and both of you have to split and get home before those lights come on.
Right.
And you're, now you're running. Oh, yeah, we know what piece away is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, those were the days. And they were calm days. That you felt safe.
Yeah.
You felt secure. I mean, we didn't have to worry about no disease flying around in the air, you know, and stuff like that. But they had the good times and bad times. They had things we should have known that we didn't, things we do now that we don't. And you just look back on it and say, well, why? And there is no explanation for it. I guess it was just the sign of the times, as they say, or you're in that era. And another thing, my mom, and most of the ladies that were around her, that worked with her, even in the neighborhood. And I started thinking about, you know, most of them did not have a car, and most of them did not drive. My mom didn't drive, Miss Addie didn't drive, Miss Johnson didn't drive. None of those women drove cars. None of them had cars. And I think about it, how did they get around? Well, if they didn't walk, somebody carried them, or they paid somebody to come and get them. I was like, oh, my God. And I just thought about this a few weeks ago. How did my mom and them get around? They did. And, hey, and they made it everywhere they needed to go, too, on time.
Mm-hmm. And you did see them walking.
And you did see, I mean, everybody could pick up everybody else, and they knew what time to come by. And if they gave them a few dollars or somebody came by and got some cake or pie or whatever, you know, I guess that was their way of bartering that, too. But and they always made the work on time. Always.
Right.
Yep. Always made it to work on time. And sometimes those white folks would come to their door and blow for them too. And they come out. Yep. So it's signs of the times. Signs of the times. That's what that was. Okay. Next, and do you have a question before I ask this one? Because I told you, come up with a question. You have something or something that you want to share with us?
Something did cross my mind. This was a while ago, but it went away.
Signs of the time. But it's something that stuck on me, and I still haven't figured it out. Every time I think I've figured it out, then something happens for the same thing. Death. My mom, dad, grandmom, nobody ever really... I can't say that you can't explain death, but they never really talked about death or advised you on death. It just a way of life or just a part of life that they would say. But sometimes death would hurt you so bad. Oh my goodness, I can't explain it. But some, especially some of those sudden deaths, like my brother Lewis. Girl, I got caught up in his death and what happened to him. They told me when I got home that I looked like I had anorexia. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I didn't talk. And I didn't try to mingle with anybody. And that must have gone on for 3 or 4 months. Lewis died in November, the end of November, 1st of December, something like that. We took him home and we buried him right before Christmas. So from November, March, I was a pitiful looking sight. My eyes were something. My jawbones were all out. My bones here were out. I mean, I was just pitiful. And nobody could explain to me why he died and how he died. And it was just upsetting. So that was one of the deaths that I just couldn't get over. I just couldn't get over for a very, very long time. And I remember my granddaddy telling me that you're born, live your life, then you grow old and die. Well, Lewis wasn't old, first of all.
Yes.
So now I'm stuck. Granddaddy said you're born, you live your life, grow old and you die. I'm like, somebody skipped a couple of steps in here, you know. And I do remember other people dying before him. You know, we had a couple of kids who had accidents. You know, they drowned and... you know, that was devastating, too. But this was my brother. That's my brother that took a spanking for me. You know, that's something you don't want to do. So when they're trying to nobody really tried to explain it to me. We were just all hurt and just crying. And most of them were eating and hurt and crying. But trying to get me to eat. But I don't know. It's just certain deaths that has this effect that you just never really get rid of. And I've never really had anybody to explain it to me, not even my mom or anything like that. So what about you?
Well, with death, you know, I've had a few.
Oh, yes. We've
had and my family.
Mm-hmm.
First, there was Patrick. You know, I had adopted Patrick and Jennifer, my niece and nephew.
Wait a minute, where was Patrick? She wasn't Patrick. Your sister?
Patrick was before Patrick.
I know.
Patrick, I had to learn with Pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Pastor's death. Pastor's death put me in a different arena because I was trying to deal with it, and what was the best way for me to deal with it was to look at people
mm-hmm.
as a garden.
As a what? As a garden?
Garden. Garden, yes.
Garden, okay.
A garden.
Okay.
And we have flowers in a garden.
Mm-hmm.
God plants the garden. He picks from his garden flowers
mm-hmm.
that he's going to take home with him. And he doesn't always pick full-grown flowers. He gets the flowers. Some, the buds are open wide. Some are not so wide. Then some are buds. But at the same time, when he puts them all together, now he has a bouquet. And Pastor was one of those flowers that was in the bouquet. Compared Pastor's death to Mama's death, Pastor was 34 when she died. Mama was 51 when she died. So with and keeping in the same context, the flowers fitting into a bouquet, Pastor's flower was not open as wide as Mama's flower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one handed.
Mm-hmm.
If this is the flower, some are like this, some are like this, and some are open a little bit wider.
Mm-hmm.
And when Daddy died at age 70. So his flower was almost always always open.
Mm-hmm.
So God gathers the bouquet. He plants the garden. God gathers the flowers or the make a bouquet. And he takes the bouquet home with him. So from that standpoint, I've been able to deal mostly. Sometimes it still hurts. Well, it always hurts.
Always.
But it's easier for me to mm-hmm. identify a death as a part of a bouquet that God gathers up. We don't know when he's going to come and pick from his garden, but it's his choice. He picks whatever he wants to pick from that garden. Mm-hmm. There can be any shape, any style, anything that God selects, then he takes that bouquet home with him. Mm-hmm. So that analyzing death as a compared to a bouquet of flowers.
Bouquet of flowers. Well, this happened, I started saying, well, a few years back in 2012, my nephew, Merrick, you remember, Sherri Ann Smith, they used to live across in front of us when we were over in the projects. Anyway, Miss Smith, Miss Lovely Lee Smith, yeah? Remember those people? Where her daughter, Sherri Ann, died, and, you know, Walter had two kids by her. So those are my nieces and nephews. So, and usually with the nieces and nephews, since I'm Aunt Trish, they think they can talk to me about anything, which they can, you know, if it's to be kept with me, it's kept with me. Anyway, Maine, I'll call it Maine. Oh, the kids were hurt. Their mom was like their pride and joy. So after the funeral, a few weeks or so after the funeral, he called and he said, "Hey, Trish, hey, Trish." I'm like, "What is it, baby?" He said, "I don't understand. I don't understand." I said, "What don't you understand? Why my mama and my grandmama have to die early? And then on my daddy's side, all my grandmama and my grandmama, my great-grandmama, everybody's just living long, long lives. Why? Why did my mama have to die so early?" So I went like, I just froze. I didn't know what to say. And he was in pain, and you could tell that he was in pain, but I had no comeback for him. And I kept looking and searching for that. I said, "Baby, whatever you need, just let me know." But I don't know the answer to that one, right? So years later, I was at home with my mom, and then I think Dan died, Dan Christian. Our cousin, and Dan was just, you ask Dan for anything, he's there, he's supportive, you know, he just has the answers to everything, Dan the man. And Dan died. So, and I thought about talking to Merrick the same way. And I went home and I asked Mom, I said, "Well, Mom, I don't get it, you know, Maine asked me this, and then this happened to Dan, and, you know, both of them were very good people and everything, so why did, you know, they have to die so early?" And she turned around and looked at me just as stern as she wanted to be. And she said, "Well, God likes good people, too. He needs good people sometimes, too." And I was like, Oh, yeah, to help out with the bad ones, you know, to help out with someone. And for some reason, that just made so much sense to me. You say, if you're going to be an angel, you're going to help God, because some of us don't go graciously into heaven. We need a little coasting and a little more teaching and helping and prepping. So I just took it upon myself that, oh, so that's what they're doing. He takes a good one to help out with the ones that need a little bit more work. Okay, that makes sense. You know, but for some reason, that answer, when she said that God needs good people too, I was like, oh. And that was it. And it just made sense to me. So I was like, oh, my God. So I don't know. But since then, we've had a couple of other deaths that they were painful, hurtful, sudden, you know, folks getting shot, you know, getting burned up and all that kind of stuff. But I was able to take them a little bit better now that she told me that. And I guess a part of it, too, is growing up and being a little bit more mature. So that helps, too. Definitely helps, too. So with you and Ann and being mother and daughter, what is one of the best things, best experiences that you and your daughter have shared?
Well, my first grandchild.
That is
there's nothing like a grandchild.
Nothing in the world. Even on the aunt side.
I was so excited with this grandbaby coming.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, I was in education. And I worked at a school where the kids, the young adults, will graduate with an associate's degree here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, one of the girls could knit. I had her knitting everything for this grandbaby. Summer edit, blankets, socks.
Little capes.
Yeah, whatever you can think of. And of course, here in Dallas, you're born on March 16th. And it was hot. I don't know what. But at any rate, the experience of having a grandchild, that first grandchild, that's always been a reward for me.
Wow.
So it's nothing like having a grandchild. But now, another thing with Ann has always been very smart.
Very smart. She is.
And when I was at Delta State, I was still in college when Ann graduated high school. Of course, I quit my job in 83 and graduated in 83. And this is when I had that 1 year left. And Ann challenged me that she made A's, then I had to make A's. So the thing was, I got to go to keep up with Ann.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's going to ask me about my grades if I didn't make an A, you know, on stuff. Of course, you mentioned work study. After I quit my job, I was able to get work study at Delta State. But the challenge with her and trying to keep track of what kind of grades I was going to make, what kind of grades I could make.
Mm-hmm.
And me being the mom, I just couldn't let her beat me out.
Oh, a little competition going on here, huh?
Yeah.
Competitive spirit in the right way. Definitely. Oh, that is great. You can't top that grandchild thing. There's nothing in the world like a grandchild. No. But one of the, I don't know if it was the best experience or learning experience or a weird experience. You know, everybody's always told me from the time I was growing up, you know, I was just very, I chose to use the word energetic than to use the word hyper, because I don't think I'm hyper. I'm energetic, okay? So when I would go home from college and visit, or, you know, during the summer, I'm always away in Chicago. So whenever I'm at home, my mom, especially when I grew up and after high school, she said I was like lightning going through the house and in the house. I go and do my chores, do my work and this, that, and the other, and then I get dressed and I leave. And I would do that repeatedly over and over, whether I'm home for a week or 2 weeks or this, that, and the other. I always had somewhere to go. So she called me into the room, and I just gotten dressed, and I was getting ready to go. I said, Mom, she said, sit down. I'm like, okay, sit down for a second. She didn't say anything. I said, Mom, what do you need? She says, nothing, just need you to sit down. I'm like, okay. I said, you want me to scratch your hair? Nope. You want me to do your nails? Nope. Say, you want me to read something to you? She said, nope. And I'm looking around the room, what does she want? And, you know, I'm thinking I have to go. And she just made me sit there. She said, just sit there for a minute. You don't have to say anything. Don't do anything. I just want you to sit down. Girl, you know, if you've ever tried to meditate before and they tell you to take a few minutes at a time, that must have been the longest period I have ever sat in one spot with me and my mom. We're not talking. We're not doing anything. But, I mean, she wasn't even watching the TV. And I'm like, I'm just sitting here. She just, yeah, sit. And I said, and it felt like hours. But just to look at the clock, I probably spent 15 minutes. 15 minutes. And I'm still to this day, and I think I know what she was trying to get me to see, that, you know, I was moving too fast, first of all. And next thing, I wasn't spending any quality time with her or anything like that. But it was just different. She'd never done that before. I didn't do anything wrong. I'd done all my work. All the kids were clean. I mean, everything was right. But she wanted me just to sit there for a minute. I must have been, what, in my early 20s? Sit there for that long? I kid you not. It was a different kind of experience for me. It was definitely a different kind of experience for me. All right, ma'am. Well, we've gone through a few things, and it's 8 o'clock TikTok. That's what they always say. And I really do appreciate it. I think my other guests must have had trouble getting in, but I do appreciate you, and we know what it's like growing up back in the day. But we call it back in the day, but Shelby, and I don't know who's listening to this, Shelby, back in the day when we were kids, it looked much better. It was more of a community, more of a town. You had more of a reason to go and to stay and even study. But now, I don't know. Your comments on Shelby, anything?
Shelby, back in the day. Was the place to be.
Yes.
And I would tell anybody, yep. They said, where are you from? I'm from Mississippi. Mississippi? Of course, I'm from Mississippi.
Yep, tell them.
I said, you know something else? They said, what? I said, where your mama from?
Uh-oh.
They would say, I'm from Chicago. I said, where your mama from? I said, your mama is from either Mississippi.
Or Alabama. Georgia.
Arkansas,
Tennessee.
Louisiana.
One of the other. Dirty South.
It's good to be from Mississippi.
It is.
I wouldn't be the person I am today,
mm-hmm.
if I didn't grow up the way I had grown up, and I didn't miss anything, and to be from Shelby, Mississippi.
Yep.
I'm proud to have been from Shelby, Mississippi.
I am too. And the only thing I regret that some of the other people that are in Shelby have not had a chance to get out and get some exposure outside of Mississippi. So I think that's what helped me a lot when I was able to travel some during the summer. Although most of the time I went to Chicago to be with my dad, but we ended up in Indiana, Michigan, you know, different places, and all around. And even after I graduated from high school and college, I kept going to different places. There are very few states that I haven't been in, and I visit quite a few different countries. And it's just a different world in most of them, especially when you go outside of the states. But I just hope everybody get out and get some exposure to away from their surroundings. Get out your comfort zone. Go see something. Do something. Yes. But Ms. Hutton, I really do appreciate you, and thank you so much for being on. I do appreciate it. So we will say goodnight to everyone, and just think for yourself, what did your mom or grandmom do or did not do to teach you before you turn 21? Again, good night, everyone. I do appreciate it. Bye-bye, Bernice.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
No.